Pock and Talk, an Arsenal podcast. I'm your host, Tez, and this week we have a very special guest, Kevin Campbell. How are you, Kev?
I'm good, thank you. I'm a bit sore after yesterday, but hey, that's life.
It's one of them things, isn't it, mate? It would have been a good game to win, but we didn't show up. But we'll get involved in it a little bit more shortly. I'll just introduce you to our other guests and each and every week. Tony, how are you, mate?
I've been better, but I'm glad to be here speaking with an Arsenal legend and, of course, you two, as always.
And Schwinn, how are you, buddy?
I'm okay. I'm half here and I'm half with Mr. Santi Cazorla. But we have Kevin Campbell joining us. This is the highlight of my podcasting career and of our podcasting career, so I cannot wait to get cracking with this.
So I agree. Right, Al, let's go. Tony, you got a couple of questions for Kev?
I know one, at the moment everyone's obviously hammering Wenger and I don't particularly want him to be Arsenal manager anymore, but it's not by far the worst Arsenal have been. And so you was there 94, 95, 93, 94, when we was coming sort of mid-table. I think it was 12th in 94, 95. Was the atmosphere and everything around the club as bad then?
No, I don't think it was. I think that was obviously the leader, who was George Graham, had gone, and we were kind of in a bit of limbo because we didn't have a manager really at the time. I think Stuart Houston took over. And it was, you know, we didn't have really any direction. Stuart Houston had been the number two for a number of years after Theo Foley was number two to George Graham. And, you know, we'd had quite a bit of success. So, you know, a few players in the team were getting older. And, you know, we really needed that next challenge, that next direction. And we just didn't get it.
Do you think if social media was about, things would have been a lot more negative? I'm not purely blaming social media for what's going on at the moment, because there's a lot wrong with the club at the moment, but do you think it does have an impact, is probably what I'm trying to ask.
Well, I think it does. Obviously, it's a medium that is good when things are going well, but when things ain't going so well, you know, you're open to criticism, which you were always open to criticism when I played, and a lot of it was, yeah, maybe not social media, but it was the radio phone-ins and stuff like that. So, look, when you're doing good, you take the plaudits. And when things are going bad, you got to, you know, have that thick skin, because there will be a lot of flack flying about. But I'll tell you one reason why it wasn't so bad back then. At least that team had a goal. That team, you knew that team would try and put a performance in, because no one's got a divine right to win. But just like any fan, if the team has a goal and it doesn't quite work out, you can accept that. But when the team doesn't have a goal, run hard and fight, you know, that's makes people question the heart of the players.
Okay, Kevin, Tony.
No, go on, because I was going to slightly change the topic. So,
okay. Kevin, just on... And looking at Lacazette, Aubameyang and Welbeck, and as a former striker yourself, what's it do to Welbeck's confidence bringing in these other two strikers?
Well, I don't think it does much for his confidence, obviously. I think Danny, the great thing about Danny is he can play a multitude of positions. He's probably better playing on the left-hand side. You know, having that burden of being that main striker, I don't think suits him. I think playing from the left, where he can chip in with goals, but he can create as well. He could use his attributes much better from the left-hand side. But, you know, I think Arsenal have got a kind of an embarrassment of riches at the top end of the pitch, but we tend to suffer at the back end. And, you know, these issues have been there for such a long time and never been addressed.
Mm-hmm.
Since we are on strikers, I'm going to butt in real quick, but since we are on the subject of strikers, Kevin, Lacazette struggled a lot during the first half of the season, and there was a lot of speculation as to why. Yesterday we saw something similar, one could argue, albeit it was just the one game. But there seems to be this pattern where whichever striker we play, Welbeck, Aubameyang, Lacazette, they seem a little disjointed from the rest of the team. As a former striker, what do you think is the way to proceed for our number nines who are struggling really to, you know, hit the ground running right now?
Well, what I would say is, as a striker, you always tend to look at where is my supply? Who are the players who are going to supply me? We brought Lacazette in. We had no game plan for Lacazette. It's kind of put together in a jigsaw type thing. And sometimes the pieces fit and sometimes it don't. I felt sorry for Lacazette earlier on in the season because he was playing, he's being taken off when really the last 20 minutes is where he's going to get a lot of his goals. He's getting sparse service. He's getting left out of the team. He's our star striker at 50-odd million pounds and he's been left on the bench. I can't believe what I was seeing. So, you know, you're playing with his confidence straight away there. Obviously, Aubameyang, you saw Aubameyang yesterday. There was no pattern. There was no, you know, who was going to supply him with the chances? We're just not doing it. And Welbeck plays, and it's the same thing. So, you know, you can blame the strikers all you like, but if there's no supply line and there's no chances, striker can't do his job.
I just want to dig a little bit deeper on your opinion of Lacazette, as I said, as a former striker, because I look at it and I've got some friends that play in the Football League, and when I talk about it to them, I don't see, like, what do you see as Lacazette's strengths? Because obviously his finishing's quite good, but with confidence that's gone. So, I mean, how best to play with him? Because he's not the quickest. I'm not saying he's slow, but he's not the quickest. He's not the strongest. He's not the most physical. He's a willing runner, but he doesn't seem to outpace defenders. I mean, how would you set up, or if you was him, how would you want the team set up behind you to play to his strengths?
No, well, what you've got to do is, it's like he's like a fox in a box type player. So what you've got to do is you've got to have the creative players around him to get him the chances. See? So every striker's different. Aubameyang's different. Aubameyang can play on the shoulder of defenders. So what you've got to then do is try and release him. But with Lacazette, you have to play maybe a shorter passing game to get him opportunities in and around the box. You've got to play a lot sharper and quicker in and around the box, and that's where he seems to be at his best. So, buying these players is one thing, but knowing how to get the best out of them is the key. And, you know, I'll put Mesut Ozil in there as well. We brought Ozil in. We haven't given him the platform from midfield to get the best out of him. We bought Lacazette. We haven't got a game plan for Lacazette, how we're going to get him the chances. And now Aubameyang's there. I think Mkhitaryan's going to be quite instrumental in utilising him. But when Mkhitaryan's not there, like yesterday, you know, there was nothing. There was nothing. And that's what I can't get. What's the point in having the best gun if you're not going to give it the bullets?
Kevin, is it Wenger making these decisions with the players coming in, or is it somebody else in the club?
Well, Arsene Wenger's the manager, so if he's not making the decisions, you know, we don't know who is. Arsene Wenger's run the show for 20-odd years now, so it's got to be him making the decisions.
Mm-hmm. So he's bringing he's called for Lacazette to come in with no game plan.
Yeah, I mean, look, Arsenal seem to be playing off the cuff. Where when it goes good, obviously the opposition don't know because it's off the cuff. But you need a system in place. And there isn't one as far as I'm concerned because, again, the components of the team that need addressing don't get addressed. So, you know, when there's no structure, it's going to fall down flat. So I'm not surprised it's going wrong. It's painful to see and it's painful to watch, but it's really no surprise.
Mm-hmm. Schwinn, you got any?
Yeah, speaking of Arsene Wenger and, you know, some of the unaddressed components, Kevin, you've played with, you know, some amazing leaders on the pitch. I mean, I remember listening to the Gooners in the USA podcast and you calling Tony Adams the ultimate leader. I was wondering, yeah, have you ever been in a situation where your team, you know, on a given game or for a given stretch of time, when there was a lack of leadership? Because we're seriously suffering from that right now. So when you have that void and you have a string of results that doesn't necessarily help you, how does a team reinvigorate itself for the remainder of the season?
Well, I'll be honest with you, I don't know, because the teams where I've played in have had leaders. Yeah, there's been times where things have gone wrong, but that's where the leadership and your leading players galvanise the group. Now, I think Jack Wilshere's a bit of a voice, but I don't see anybody else on that pitch who is even upset with what's going on, you know? And yeah, I'm telling players what to do and pulling people and, you know, being that voice. I just don't see it. Now, that I can't get. I'm not saying that you have to be shouting all the time, but you have to, it has to hurt you. And I don't see enough of it hurting the Arsenal players.
Mm. Since we're type of digressing into the City game and a couple of players, well, let's get your thoughts on the lineup. What you actually thought? Was that what you expected, Kevin? Three at the back against City?
Did I expect it? I expected a back four because I think the players know how to play a back four as opposed to playing three at the back. They don't play often, so you can't be good at it. You know, doing something that you're unsure of, and you're playing into Manchester City's hands. Mm. Really, you're playing into their hands, and they didn't even have to play outstandingly well because we made enough mistakes to beat ourselves.
Mm-hmm. That goal Aguero scored. Do you put Mustafi at fault there?
Of course, of course. You know, it's schoolboy stuff, really. You know, it's you've got to be. You can't be in front of your striker when he's onside, when the ball going over your head, and then expecting to get a free kick. Come on, this is defending 101. This is basics, and I'm sure, you know, he'll probably cringe when he watches it back. But you know, it's too late. It's you know, it gives a very, very good Manchester City team a leg up.
Tony, I'll go to you now. On what was your expectations of the lineup, mate? Did you expect it?
I mean, in our preview show, I said I thought we'd go with a back four, but with I thought Elneny would play and he'd drop into the back five, and we didn't have the ball. It seems to be in what we've done in all of the big games this year. It's what we've done at City away with Cochley, and we've done it in both legs against Chelsea in the Carabao Cup. Chelsea away in the league, we were still set with a back five at that time, and Tottenham at home in the league, we played a back five. So I was very much expecting it, but I didn't think he'd bring Chambers in, especially after how he played on Thursday. I thought he would either, as I said, play on any there, or if he wanted to go for an actual back five, tuck Monreal in one and play either Kolasinac or Maitland-Niles at left wing back. In terms of, I mean, the goal was clearly Mustafi's fault, the first goal. But I didn't think the tactics were too bad. I agree with Kevin that we was kind of playing into their hands, but I don't think we're good enough at the moment, as sad as it is to say, to just go sort of toe-to-toe with them. So I think I think the idea was accept they're going to have the ball, let them have it in areas that aren't dangerous, and stop them playing essentially where they want to play. And I think that worked to an extent early on, but then you can't concede a ridiculous goal like that. I mean, if you spoke to any other Premier League manager, they would say, we want City to go long from goal kicks. If you can make them do that, you're winning. So to make them do that, we've done well, but then to concede like that is literally unforgivable. You can't make them play at the way they're at their weakest, where they don't want to play in that way, and then concede doing that. That, for me, that's absolute nonsense, and it is purely unforgivable. I know Arsenal will ban their players for coming out on social media, and I'm not surprised because the backlash they'll get is unbelievable. And there's not one of them that you can praise from the game, I don't think. But what Mustafi's done for the first goal is literally unbelievable, because we've worked on a plan. I know we weren't playing well, but we've got them at 0-0. We've got them playing out of their mould, so to speak. And to concede like that, I can't find any other words apart from unforgivable, really.
Mm-hmm. Schwim, what's your take on it, mate?
I wanted the back three. I remember saying during our last show that I would like to see the back three, but I also did say that, you know, I think Wenger's done with it. But again, Chambers is a big question mark for me. He was okay yesterday. He wasn't bad. I mean, as compared to the others, everyone was bad yesterday. But it's a case of, you know, bad versus worse. So, but that Mustafi goal is still bothering me. I mean, you remember that game against United where he sort of allegedly faked an injury, you know, because he knew he had probably lost, you know, the ball carrier. It was something similar, yeah. Almost. It felt like there was no push. I mean, to even call it, you know, a soft push would be unfair, I feel. Aguero just got goal side, which is defense 101. Everyone knows you need to be goal side of the man you're, you know, marking. And he just let him have, you know, a free run at goal. And a striker of Aguero's quality is going to punish you. David Ospina can also be questioned, I feel. You know, if you're committing yourself as a goalkeeper, you either got to go all the way or you got to stay in line. But you have your money on Aguero at that point, you know, one way or the other. So it would be harsh to judge Ospina on that. But spineless performance, no intent. And despite City not really being the Manchester City we've seen in the first half of the season, they had an easy, easy run in the 90 minutes.
Mm. Kevin, so we go down 1-0, and I think Monreal got an injury, and you might correct me if I'm wrong, but he went off in the 26th minute. Klesenac come on. At that point, is there anything else Wenger could have done to change things up?
Well, no, it was, I mean, Arsenal, I think Arsenal started the game quite well. You know, in the first 10 minutes, Aubameyang had a chance, which, you know, people say could have taken, but it was a good tackle by, you know, the Man City defender, Walker. But no, the game wasn't out of our reach or anything at that stage. So, you know, like for like, bring on Kolasinac to Marshall and run the left-hand side. It's the weak part of this team when we start going a goal behind.
Mm.
And having to kind of get ourselves out of second gear, because this is a final, you know, you should be pumped up. Did we show Manchester City a bit too much respect? I think we did. You know, I didn't see that desire to go and close them down the way they closed Arsenal down. I didn't see that want and that will, even when they went a goal behind, you know, to really go after Manchester City, because it's a final, it's a one-off game. I didn't see it, so you know, it's quite. It doesn't shock me, because I've said it for such a long time now. Arsenal's issues have never been addressed, and that we could just expect the same thing. It's going to get worse. It's going to be more pain for us. Because until we address these problems in the club, and that's from top to bottom, actually, that's not just, you know, the manager, that's recruitment, that's, you know, the way people think in the club, that's the desire, a bit of steel in the squad, all of the above. And it's painful for me to say it.
Have you noticed a couple of little changes this season? Pointing in, I know it's still not the greatest of seasons we are having, but it's very un-Arsenal to buy a striker of a bank like Aubameyang in January, go out in last summer with Lacazette, Mkhitaryan as well in January. Do we start to see a little bit of change happening?
Yeah, but you also got to add, you sold Sanchez goals. Mm. So you've got two world class players in your squad, one leaves. Really, you should be adding those parts to the two world-class players. But you could have as many offensive world-class players as you like. If you can't keep the ball out of your net, you're in big trouble in the Premier League. And that's what we're seeing. You know, when the likes of Wigan can defend better than Arsenal, you've got questions have to be asked.
Do you scrap the whole back line, start again?
Well, here's the issue. A lot of people talk about, you know, the back four not being good enough. Who do you bring in? And if there is no change of manager, you're going to have the same problems. Because there's no defensive unity. There's no defensive cohesion. And I know Steve Bould could do it, but I don't think he's doing any of the coaching for that back four. Because they would be a lot better if he coached them.
It's a real shame. I was actually having a conversation with a friend of mine today, and just the comparison of Mustafi, was it 30-odd million we paid for Mustafi? And then you look at Manchester City, they're paying like 50-odd millions for their defenders. Obviously, they say that's a big part of their plans.
Well, you got, again, that's why, you know, there's a lot of things that have to be, there's going to have to be a ruthless streak at Arsenal to address these issues. Manchester City are spending over 100 million on fullbacks. Recognise international fullbacks. Recognise players. I mean, I never heard of Mustafi before he joined, you know, Arsenal. He wasn't someone who you would think, yeah, he's someone who would buy. You know, Manchester City have gone about it to improve. Arsenal have gone about it to appease. And bringing in these players, Xhaka, I'd never heard of Xhaka either. And we've been crying out for a defensive midfield player. And we're still crying out for a defensive midfield player who's got a bit of steel about him. So, you know, again, the issues never get addressed. So until someone at the club wants to address these issues, there's going to be more pain, guys.
You're not giving us much confidence here, Kevin.
No. Well, look, I'm a realist. I'll be honest with you. I'm a realist. And we have been saying the same thing for 10 years.
Yeah, true. I agree.
So if we keep saying the same thing for 10 years and expect a different outcome, we're crazy. That's the first sign of madness, isn't it? You know, expecting a different result from the same by doing the same thing. So, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people fed up about it, obviously.
But, oh, there is, yeah.
You know, it's not nice when everyone could see what's going on. Everyone could see where it needs to be strengthened. But everyone bar the manager.
Tony, I'm just going to go into, because we're bringing up a bit of a point here. There's some talk about a lot of fans aren't happy and they're boycotting tickets and whatnot.
I mean, I've seen on social media people saying our fans should boycott. I actually tweeted out to see if anyone with season tickets is boycotting, because you've got to remember, these people, including me, have already paid for the game. So I'm not going to boycott. And that's not me thinking I love the regime. I love what's going on at Arsenal, because clearly I'm as unhappy as everyone else. But it's very easy to advocate a boycott when it's cost you exactly nothing. When you're sitting, whether it be 10 miles or 10,000 miles away, it's easy for you to tell someone else what to do with their money. From what I can gather, as I said, from all the season ticket holders I've spoken to, and I've put a few tweets out there, I don't think there will be a boycott. There might be empty seats, but even people I know that are selling their tickets, they're selling them. They're not leaving them empty. For me, that's not a boycott. A boycott, because they're saying, hit the club where it hurts and starve them of the money. But if you're selling your ticket on, then the club's still getting its money and you're getting your money. You just don't fancy going that day, which is fair enough. I can understand that performances recently have been unacceptable and people might not want to go to games, especially on a Thursday night when it's probably going to be snowing and it's going to be freezing. but I think there's a big difference between a boycott and empty seats. So I wondered with Kevin, obviously we spoke about that year where we finished 12th, and obviously there was many good years as well while you were there. But have you ever heard of, or not obviously heard of, but was you ever involved in any club where fans were boycotting or protesting against the club?
Well, I remember the early days of at Arsenal, when under the Terry Neill regime, when there was a serious disgruntlement and disorder, you know, at the club. I mean, I've seen it at quite a few clubs. Obviously, I joined, you know, Everton and West Bromwich Albion at times where they were going through difficult spells. But what one thing it did do, going there, the players could relate to the fans and the fans relate to the players. I think that a lot of the disgruntlement was to the board because the players were putting a shift in. Obviously, we're talking different, you know, ends of the Premier League spectrum now. But it's very difficult when things are going bad to see any good, to see any light. And sometimes all fans need to see is a bit of fight in it. And when you don't even get that, that makes life a lot more difficult. And, you know, trying to hit the club in the pocket sometimes is a bit like, you know, biting your nose off to spite your face. You know, I think showing up, being there, this is one that we're just going to have to ride out because, you know, trying to hurt the club is only hurting us as fans, as supporters. Let's be honest. Because we all want the same thing. We all want Arsenal to do well. Of course we do. But unfortunately, this is something we've just got to ride it out because this is a cycle. I believe change has to happen now. But I've believed that for a long time. But the way it's going now, we're getting worse. So change has to come, or else, you know, it's gonna get a lot more painful, guys. It is.
As a player, you get on the pitch on a Saturday at 3 o'clock, and you look round and half the ground's empty. That must have an effect on you, surely. So as I said, by boycotting, and I think you've kind of just touched on it, by boycotting, we would also be damaging the players, right? As I said, if they're looking at a half-empty stadium when they come to kick off, or would that not be the case?
Yeah, of course it would. Of course it would. You know, it's a vicious cycle. Because if you're trying to hurt the club in the pocket by not turning up, then that lessens the atmosphere at the game. It gives the opposition a shot in the arm because all of a sudden there's discontent at the club. So, you know, that vicious circle just keeps on going round. Of course we want the team to win. We want the team to win every game because it's Arsenal. But it's a difficult one for fans because a lot of the time their voices don't get heard. And they have to try and do what they think is right. Because, let's be honest, the club haven't exactly rubbed themselves in glory for the fans or made things plain to the fan base about what they're doing. Because even now, I don't know what the plan at Arsenal is. They're buying all these players. Who knows what the plan is? Nobody knows. I don't. Do you?
I wish I could answer yes, but obviously we're all in the same boat. I was listening to a radio station yesterday, and they were saying that basically, why in terms of Kroenke, that he's just there to make money, as we all know, and it's his business. And in a business sense, you have to say fair enough. As much as I hate it as a fan, but what they were saying is, why would he come out and say anything? Because he's getting minimal stick because he's not on the end of it. He's not in the country. But his asset is growing in value. Arsenal grows in value every day, and it's making him money while he's doing it. So while it's horrible for fans, I mean, can you see anyone coming out and saying what we're trying to do when the owner ultimately is very happy with what's going on? As horrible as that is to say as a fan who pumps thousands upon thousands each season into the club.
Look, the team isn't run by the owner. The team is run by the manager. Let's be brutally honest. The team is run by the manager. The manager is the one who sets the tempo. He sets the dressing room. He gets the right players in. and they're the ones they fight for him, because they're an extension of the manager, or they're an extension of the fans. That's the way it's got to be. And the owner, fair enough, he's in America. I'm not saying he's not down for some stick, but all roads lead to the manager at the end of the day. They have to, because in any business, if the business is failing and you're the manager, the buck stops with you. So the buck stops with Arsene Wenger. Arsene Wenger has accepted, I don't know what the directive is down to him, but again, we keep coming back to the same rhetoric. The issues in the team are not getting addressed. The defensive midfield, I think defensive midfield is a massive one for Arsenal, solely because they're so off the cuff going forward, but there has to be some discipline in that centre of the park. And ever since we lost Gilberto, we haven't had that real disciplined person who could not only protect the back four, but break things up in the centre of the pitch.
So just before, because you touched on that, I've got a question from Red Fulcrum, Kevin. Do you think Wenger will resign if Arsenal fail to win Europa League and secure top four position?
No. I don't think he will resign. Ever. I'll tell you why. Because you look at the end of last season. It was the perfect time, wasn't it? You know, he'd won the FA Cup.
Yeah.
And it had gotten toxic at the club, you know, for a period. So it would have been ideal for him to walk away, but you know, nobody done anything, and he ends up signing a new 2-year contract. And here we go again. So the hierarchy, he's good for the hierarchy at the club. And, you know, they obviously like what he's doing. So, you know, this isn't going to end well. And I think Arsene Wenger's been a fantastic manager for the club. But unfortunately, football isn't about what you've done for me yesterday. It's about what have you done for me now. And right now, Arsenal are getting worse.
Speaking of now, and I mean, I think most of us can agree on, you know, how things need to change and how quickly things need to change. But just in a couple of days, we play Manchester City again at the Emirates. Now, keeping in mind what we can do in the given time, if you found yourself in the manager's spot, how would you set up the team and what would be your game plan to combat City?
Well, it depends who's available. And your tactics you've got to show better than you showed at Wembley. So the tactic really is, you know, you could say about tactics and all that, but it's about the attitude. The attitude of the team has to be a lot better. You know, don't be so respectful for them. And they're at our patch, we're at the Emirates. Make it a fight. Go out and fight them. That's what we want to see. I'd rather see us go down fighting than going down with a whimper. I'd much rather see us fight. So forget the tactics board. It's about you against your opponent today. Go out there and beat him. Go and dominate him. But will that be the team talk? I doubt it.
Sorry. That leads on to what I was going to ask. And that does the team lack character in a sense that no one, like as I said, when I go to away games, Jack Wilshere gets booed every time he gets the ball because teams dislike him because he's you could call him a horrible little fucker, but he's a horrible little fucker. But everyone else, no one hates Arsenal players anymore because they're not in their face. They're not afraid. You think years gone by, everyone hated Vieira. Everyone hated Ian Wright. To an extent, they hated Merson because of his ability and many other players in your era. But now, is it down to a lack of character that just literally no one dislikes our players anymore?
Yeah, well, 100%. Look, back in the day, and I don't want to keep going back in the day, but teams hated us because we were good, we were tough, we'd be in your face, you knew you were in for a tough day, whether you wanted to play football or you wanted to have a fight. That mean streak isn't there. It's too nice. It's too soft. And you see that when I see that more now than ever before, because sometimes the team can fight, and most of the time the team are inconsistent. That comes from the left-hand side. That's the heart of the team. The team got challenged by Troy Deeney saying that they didn't have the cojones. Could you remember that earlier on in the season?
All too well.
Exactly. Now, it hurt. I'm an ex-Arsenal player. That hurt me. And Troy Deeney was right to say it, but that reaction, you don't want any opposition player to ever question your heart or and see if you've got the, you know, you've got the cojones for the battle. But this Arsenal team, it keeps on happening. It keeps on repeating itself. So is the type of player that is coming in the correct player for Arsenal? And at the moment, it's no, because there is a serious lack of fight. They're all wonderful players. They're all good players. But it's not enough being a good player. You've got to be able to fight. This is the English Premiership. You have to be able to fight. And you've got to fight fire with fire sometimes.
Sorry, Tony, I thought you were going to continue. So back to the City game quickly, Kevin. Company scored. He got the second goal in the 58th minute. Now, Wenger did he took Chambers off and Welbeck came on. What was he thinking there? He's two goals behind. We've obviously got to catch up, but then we concede again.
Well, I don't know what his philosophy was, because look, the team weren't getting close to Manchester City. So you can make as many substitutions as you like. If you're not actually stopping the opposition, how are you going to get back in the game? They're having the majority of the play. So if they're having the majority of the play, what you've got to do, you've got to try and win the ball back off them. We couldn't do that. And then we start to look sluggish in the centre of the pitch. And they're just running by us. That is unacceptable. That is unacceptable. I can understand players can have a bad game. I've been there myself. I've had plenty of bad games. But one thing you can't ever say is he didn't run, he didn't try. And when other players are running by you through the midfield as if you're not there, or players are walking, it's not right. So I don't know what Arsene Wenger's tactic was, because the team weren't doing anything.
I've got bit of a question to pick up on that. One of my friends that plays in the football leagues at the moment, he's doing okay. He says when he came through the ranks, the youth team manager at the time where he was said, if you work your cojones off, to use the phrase, the fans will back you and you're a 7 out of 10. And then anything you do beyond that, you go to an 8, you go to a 9 if you actually do anything. But he said, even if you're awful and you work your nuts off, the fans will give you some goodwill. And I think that's why Jack gets away with a lot with us. But why, and I don't even know if it's an Arsenal problem, because when I look at other Premier League sides, it seems to be that the players are obviously so technically gifted, but they don't all seem to work their nuts off, which is what, when you're growing up watching football, and it's obviously what you've just mentioned, it is like a rule one. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, the case is there ain't a lot of British players playing. That's one. Because you get that, because the British players get it. You know, there's a lot of good foreign players coming in, and there's a lot of not so good foreign players coming in. There's players who could really join Arsenal from, you know, if you're looking at trying to get Brits in there or get some of the younger players in there where it's going to mean something, like what George Graham done when he first came to the club. he came and started giving the youngsters a go because he knew he wanted that fire in the belly. Do the foreigners have the fire in the belly? I don't know. I don't know whether they have it or not, but it doesn't show on most of these matches where they're inconsistent. They're wonderfully gifted, but again, I'll get back to it. This is England. And England, if you don't show the passion and you don't show the work rate, people are going to question whether you have the cojones or not. And maybe it's totally different playing here than anywhere else in the world. That's why this is the best league. Because, you know, there's so many different styles, but that is one key ingredient you need. Manchester City look like they have it. They can put their foot in and battle, you know. So it's a very difficult thing to not see anymore in the game, and it's needed.
Kevin, sorry, Tony. Kevin, going into this cup, you know, compared to the obviously Champions Leagues right up there, Europa League, FA Cup, and you said you touched on foreign players and they don't wear their Arsenal heart on their sleeve type thing. What do they? How do they approach this? What do they see in this cup? Do they think, oh, it's just a little cup? It's not a big game for us, or?
Well, I don't really know what they think about it, because I'm sure in their leagues, I think England's one of the only countries that has two cup competitions. So I'm sure the FA Cup is something that the players are motivated at. But, you know, this is a game versus Manchester City in a cup final that, you know, you're not having a fantastic season. So it's an opportunity to put a trophy on the side, you know, in your cabinet. So whatever they think about it, it's an unbelievable opportunity to get silverware. Because when you look at the start of the season, most of the big teams only ever have four opportunities to win a trophy. So if you only have four and you're already, they're out the FA Cup, they're not going to win the league. So that narrows it down to two. You should be busting a gut to try and win this trophy. But absolutely busting a gut. And, you know, you don't see that. So, again, whether they actually understand the importance of it or not, I don't really know. But I can only give my opinion. It actually doesn't look like it.
From performance on the field, it doesn't. Yeah, I totally agree. Tony, what do you have? One more, mate?
I was just going to go back to the passion or the fire in the belly question. It's just that, do you think there's something that's fading out the game as a whole? Because obviously you spoke about a lot of the young players come through and they may still have that knowing what it's all about. But, I mean, I don't want to pick on one particular player, but when I watch United, they've obviously paid $90 million for Pogba and he's capable of magical things. But he's another one that, for me, doesn't play with that fire in the belly, so to speak, or the cojones, or whatever term you want to give it. And obviously he's regarded as one of the best players in the world. He was the highest transfer in the world until last summer. So do you think that's just something that teams are trying to phase out the game in favour of maybe technical quality?
Well, I have to disagree with you there. I do think that Pogba has got that fire in his belly. Pogba earned his stripes at Manchester United as a youngster. Obviously, he had to leave to go to Juventus to make a name for himself. But I just think that sometimes when you're not playing well, and your quality is being questioned, and a lot of people put a lot of onus on a price tag. But at the end of the day, you know, Pogba is a fantastic player, and he's still a young player. So this is really his only second season in the Premier League. So, you know, you're going to get some inconsistencies at times. But, you know, I think he has got fire in the belly. What I tend to see in the Premier League is you don't get those games that used to be swashbuckling games where tackles are flying in and all, you know, where all the fans are up for it. You know, obviously the Derby game. Let's not talk about the North London Derby at Wembley, where second half we went missing. But again, that is a bit of roll up your sleeves time, because Tottenham came to bully us, Spurs did, and we couldn't handle it. Now, if teams could do that to Arsenal, what does it say about Arsenal's heart that they don't fight fire with fire? And you look at, especially, you look at the teams who have given Man City a lot of trouble in the cups. Have been the teams, lesser teams. Teams from the lower divisions have given them more tougher games than Premiership teams. So what does that tell you?
Yeah, I think that was the point I was trying to get on, that teams are substituting heart, passion and fight for technical quality, whereas the lower league teams, they're technically not as good, usually, but they will put their balls on the line, so to speak. That's kind of, I mean, maybe I was wrong in picking out Pogba. I was just thinking of some recent performances, but it's similar, the same similar point I was trying to get onto, that I think a lot of Premier League teams seem to be favouring quality over the grit and determination to win.
Yeah, but is it quality? That's the issue. Is it quality when Wigan could beat Manchester City? Arsenal get beat 3-0 easily by Manchester City. To me, that don't make sense. We were always taught, growing up at Arsenal, from the first day, you were told, you know, you've got to win, earn the right out to win the battle to be able to use your ability. The first thing you've got to do is battle, is fight, and then your quality should come out on top. But it's gone so far the other way now, where it's, you know, all this technical ability. But technical ability isn't enough, because you need steel with it. And Arsenal just haven't got that steel.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to disagree with whatever Kevin is saying, because I think most Arsenal fans would agree at this moment that more than anything, I mean, you know, the results are not necessarily the worst thing, but we want to see our team fight. And we've lacked that fight in arguably the last 18 months. Kevin, the only ray of hope for the remainder of the season is the Europa League at this moment, because it's what will, you know, guarantee us Champions League, which is almost essential, one could argue, for, you know, recruiting talent. We have Milan coming up next, but we still have some other, you know, teams which are, you know, going to prove to be a tough challenge. How do you rate our chances of going through these rounds and winning the Europa League?
Look, on any given day, Arsenal can perform and beat anybody. But my worry is always the inconsistency of the team. And when you play against good teams who have good defences and good attacks, sometimes Arsenal could be found wanting. Obviously, I want Arsenal to win. I'm an Arsenal fan. I have been all my life. But it doesn't bode well with the teams that's left in, especially, obviously, going to Milan. I think Arsenal could beat Milan. And then you get down to, what is it, the quarterfinal after that. And then, you know, the level of the teams do get very good. So Arsenal could win it. They could. But they're too inconsistent for me, so they're not going to win.
I want to just change the subjects slightly and firstly congratulate you and more so your son Tyrese for making his Premier League debut on Saturday.
Thank you very much.
All right. For a long time, Arsenal, especially, you touched on it under George Graham, but as well under Wenger, we've been known for bringing young talent through and giving them a chance. I don't want you to upset anyone at Stoke, so if you can't answer this, I understand. But if your son had the chance to join Wenger's Arsenal as it is at the moment, obviously I know you don't speak for him, but would you be keen on him to take that move, or would you want him to stay away from the club the way it is at the moment?
No, he's got to stay where he is, because he's got a manager who likes him, who's going to help him develop. and he's going to give them a chance. You know, Arsenal have got some good young players themselves. Edin Nketiah and Reece Nelson and those youngsters, you know. So I don't think it will be a smart move for my son. My son had to get away from Manchester City to get a chance. Going to Arsenal is just going to be the same problem. So my son's happy where he is, and he's going to develop at Stoke. He's very happy there. He likes the club and likes the manager. Yeah.
So you can rule out all the Everton fans tweeting you, Kevin, that he won't be heading that way?
Yeah, look, like I always say to the Blues, you know, obviously because of my legacy, I suppose, they'd like another Campbell there. But, you know, my son's his own man. He made the decision to leave Manchester City himself. And he's happy at Stoke. So, you know, fingers crossed. And, you know, he gets more opportunities there.
Yeah, good. And, mate, I'll just touch quickly. You're an ambassador on Bring Hope. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, Bring Hope. It's me cousin Thomas got involved with it. Bring Hope's a humanitarian foundation that does humanitarian work in Iraq, mostly the refugee camps there. And I saw a video of my cousin Thomas in a refugee camp out there, and I was mesmerized by it. And he got back, and I said, "When are we going back?" And he said, "What, you want to come out there?" I said, "Yeah, I definitely want to go out." So I've been out to Iraq now 4 times to the 50. There's 52 refugee camps out there, with 2.2 million people spread across those refugee camps. And what we're doing, we've started a football initiative out there, and we're bringing kits and balls and laying pitches for the boys and girls to play a sport they love. And, you know, it's funny that a lot of the kids out there, they haven't got much, but they've all got football tops on. You know, a lot of the kids got football tops on. And we're doing something similar in Lesotho as well, in Africa. So, you know, it's something that's very dear to our heart, and something that, you know, it's when you're helping people who need the help, it's very gratifying. It's very nice to be able to help them.
Nice. And people can donate at bringhope.info, is it, Kevin?
That's right, yeah.
Yep.
Oh, www.bringhope.info. Yeah.
Excellent.
There's
great stuff.
Donate button. You know, any donations is welcome, because what you can also do, you can track where your money goes. So the money don't just go in and it goes missing. You know, you could actually see what your money's being used for, which is always nice.
That is nice, yeah. Yeah, no, good stuff, and all the best for that. So, no, good. And guys and listeners, get behind and bringhope.info, and if you can spare a couple of dollars, please donate. Kevin is doing great things with his cousin there. You got time to hang around for some questions, Kev?
Yeah, of course I have, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I'll go around the table. I'll start with Tony, because there's some wild questions here. So it's out of frustration.
Shoot. Let's do it.
Okay, Joe Hurd, if you could stroll into the dressing room and punch one player square in the face, who and why? I'm going for Mustafi to make up the foul he claimed being outstrengthened by a player half his size.
Well, Kevin, sorry.
I wouldn't punch any player in the face, because that's assault. But what I would try and do, if I went in there, is try and get the players to have made contact with City, because I don't think it wasn't a blood and thunder game. You know, it was you play City and then, you know, we play. That's not how you beat Man City. As Wigan proved, you have to get in their faces and you have to rough them up a bit. And we couldn't do it.
Definitely needed to. You got any on that, Tay?
Well, I was just going to say, and obviously Kevin will know this a million times better than me, but you always hear reports of Tony Adams used to get people by the scruff of their neck and let them know they're in for a fight that day. And I say I wonder who does that in the Arsenal dressing room at the moment, but I know the answer is that no one does that. So a punch in the face wouldn't be the right thing, as Kevin said. But we severely need someone that grabs them by the scruff of the neck or lets them know what kind of game it is. And I mean, I say Tony Adams because he was the leader of that team, but I'm sure Kevin will tell you that it probably wasn't only him. I'm sure many of the other players would all let you know what kind of game you're in for if you didn't know.
Big time. And that's the key. The key is Tony Adams is the ultimate leader, but there was that many big characters there that everybody had a voice and everybody were accountable for the performance. And if someone wasn't do it, you got told very quickly. I mean, Tony Adams in the dressing room, you know, he knew who to put his arm around, who to grab the shirt and who to get in the face of whichever player. So, you know, that's why I call him the ultimate captain, because he knew exactly how to get the best out of you. And the other players were complemented perfectly what he'd done. And that's what surprises me about Steve Bold, because Boldy was very good and vocal as well.
Mm.
But when you see him on the bench, I know a lot of fans have questioned Steve Bold, but you know, I don't think he's allowed to do what he probably wants to do, because Arsene Wenger is the one who rules the roost.
Yeah, he doesn't say much sitting on that bench, does he?
No,
but
he doesn't.
I think he could be right though. Okay, Schwinn, we've got one for you, mate, from Vish. The positive Arsenal fan in me wants us to make a statement by defeating City on Thursday to give everyone a moral boost. Tactically, since Wenger is inept presently, how would you set up to be successfully over City?
I think... Sorry, Kevin, go ahead.
No, I'll just say, again, I'll stick with the back four. You need a back four, and you need some midfielder who's going to just sit in there, protect. But the rest of them, I'd say go and press them. Go and press that ball. Make it difficult for them.
I agree. In fact, I wanted us to go, you know, toe to toe with them before the cup for the cup final as well. But just to echo Kevin's point, you know, doesn't matter how we set up. If our boys are not willing to fight and not, you know, challenge every 50-50 ball and count themselves out of the game before, you know, even before kickoff, then we're done. We can, you know, just lay down our arms and just turn over, essentially, because that's what we do. You know, we just kick the ball around when we have it without any incision, without any impetus. And when we have the ball for only, you know, a small percentage of the time, then we got to make it count, because no one can deny City's quality. You know, they're perhaps the best team in Europe right now, arguably. So credit where credit is due. But what we got to try and do here is try and make sure that whenever they do have the ball, we neutralize them. So the best way in my book to do that, considering, you know, some of our defensive ineptitudes, would be to compensate for with desire. And having lost to them this weekend, if you're unable to muster up that desire, then I don't know what else will, because we've probably hit rock bottom at this moment, and only the players can help themselves right now.
Okay, one from our friends at Gooners in the USA, Kevin.
Yep.
Question for Super Kev. That'd be Mike over there. Honestly, what do you think is the rock bottom that we're going to hit? We're clearly not there yet and just need to know how many oxycodone I'm going to need to get through this.
Well, I think it's going to get worse. I really think it's going to get worse. What is rock bottom? Six in the table, and the season will just peter out. That for us is rock bottom, I believe. You know, it's a bit of an anticlimax already after Sunday, but I just think, you know, there is some big games still to come. But Arsenal haven't showed that fight or that desire that is needed. And if you haven't got the desire, you know, you're fighting a losing battle. So, unfortunately, our friends at Gunners in the USA, it is going to get a little bit tougher and it's going to get more painful. So, you know, lay off those tablets.
And he also said, question for Tez, what would it take to get me to say you call that a knife? This is a knife. No chance, Mike. Referring to a Crocodile Dundee statement. Okay, Glenn says, what could have been done differently, Kev? We allowed City to have the ball as discussed in the earlier pod. We got the pressure allowing Kevin De Bruyne and Silva to play players in the holes on the left. Is City getting enough credit? I can't think of many teams beating them, and they are better than us.
Yeah, there are a top side, but again, they got beat in the week by Wigan.
Mm.
You know, let's be brutally honest here. And then they're coming into a final. Manchester City didn't play fantastically well yesterday. Arsenal were awful. Arsenal gave them probably three goals. So they didn't have to play exceptionally well. But if Arsenal haven't got the fight or the desire to fight, then you're never going to beat them because they have got a big desire to play. And they will play at all costs. And they will ask you questions. So you've got to match them physically or dominate them physically. So Wigan ain't better than Arsenal and Wigan beat them.
Mm.
So it can be done. But you've got to have that desire and fight.
Okay, and again, MAA Gunner, what's the best way to freshen up this team? Is it by getting a new manager in? It will bring a new hope, new way to play. It will freshen up every player that is already in our team.
I think that it starts from, obviously, manager to recruitment. There's a lot of ruthless decisions that have to be made. Now, it seems to me that the Arsenal, they seem pretty stale to me because they're so inconsistent. You know, one thing we shouldn't, as fans, have to be questioning is the fight of the players. We should never even have to question that. That should be a given. But here we are, we're questioning that too often now, week in, week out, virtually now. You know, are they up for it? They're not making contact. Then they're not applying themselves. So a new manager has to come in and apply, get those players to apply themselves. Now, a lot of the players who are actually there may not suit a new regime. So again, that ruthless streak has to come in. And if there has to be wholesale changes, that's what has to happen. Because if you're not good enough for Arsenal, you've got to go.
I'll just give these guys a quick mention. So we are Arsenal, Cullen McKay, Jonas. They're basically all saying, you know, similar things of, you know, Wenger's got to go. But the one point they are asking, Kevin, is who would you like to see replace him?
I'd like to see Diego Simeone in there, because he's someone whose his teams play tough and they play with quality, and he's someone I really like the way his team's set up. They're a lot more disciplined, and his team go to war, and that's what I like. I like fancy football, but you know, if you're playing fancy football but you got no fight, you're not going to be challenging. And, you know, what he's done with Atletico Madrid has been sensational. So I like him. You know, obviously there are other managers. But I like Simeone because he would bring to Arsenal what Arsenal have lacked all this time, which is fight.
Mm-hmm. He's a good manager too.
Yeah.
Okay, last one from Shree. He says, from the remaining 11 games, if we have 7 wins, 2 draws, 2 losses, overachievement considered a shambles, we would be 4 points short of Manchester City. Current point tally Is that the reason enough to burn the club down and start again on as a Sunday league team?
Well, if he's talking about 7 wins, if are Arsenal going to get 7 wins? Again, you know, this if hypotheticals, it's no good. It doesn't make sense. But what is needed is Arsenal need to be challenging. Arsenal, as a football club, are one of the biggest football clubs in the world. And Arsenal are now in sixth position in the Premier League. Nowhere near. Are Arsenal going to get top four? No, they're not going to get top four. Definitely not going to get top four because a lot of the clubs ahead of us are better than us, if we're brutally honest. So no one's turning the club into a pub team at all. We never would do that. We love the club too much. But change is needed in order to bridge that gap to be challenging at the top end of that league. And that's what's needed.
Actually, I've just got one more from this one from KM, Kerry McCollum. And because I was thinking about it myself today, in all honesty, where do you think Arsenal is as an identity compared to the other teams in the league at the moment?
Arsenal don't have an identity because they're inconsistent. Teams like playing against Arsenal right now because it looks like Arsenal will give you a chance to beat them. So there is no identity. I mean, the identity of previous teams, you knew the team had quality, but it had toughness. This team's got quality, but it hasn't got the toughness. It hasn't got that desire, that mental desire to go and challenge the opposition, dominate the opposition for long periods. So Arsenal don't have an identity right now. And it is really a shame that it's come to this.
It is. Well, I was only saying to Tony and Schwinn earlier tonight that I'd have to think a long way back to the last time teams were actually frightened of Arsenal, and I think Schwinn mentioned it'd probably be the Invincibles.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right. You know,
okay.
But that team had quality and it had fight. You know, you've got to have the two.
Something we're lacking now.
Oh, big time.
Tony, you got another question, mate, and hopefully a bit lighter.
Yeah, just, I mean, we've all been, I don't want to say negative, we've all been a bit down in the dumps, but considering what's happened to us yesterday, that's not a surprise. So I just wanted to try and lighten the mood a bit. You played with some renowned characters, obviously Ian Wright springs to mind, but Paul Merson, Ray Parler, and the list goes on. Have you got any, I don't know, stories from either the changing room or something that on the training ground or a team night out, just something that maybe you wouldn't know, just to lighten the mood a bit and tell us about the character of them players, personality, I guess.
We had a lot of fun back then, and you know those were the eras of no mobile phones and selfies and all that kind of thing. We had a lot of. There used to be an old fella at the club called Paddy. He was caretaker. He was a fantastic fella. And after one of the games, we took Paddy on the pitch, and Paddy was saying, you know, he could do better than we could. So the players took him on the pitch, and he was taking penalties. So we had to take. We were in our suits and stuff like that. So Paddy's got Wellingtons on and he's taking penalties. He didn't miss a penalty. He was betting all the players that he could score and he was scoring every single one. So again, Paddy come in and said, you see, yous are all crap. You're all crap. So we put him into a five-a-side. We put him into a five-a-side and he couldn't even stand up, poor Paddy. He pulled a hamstring, he pulled a groin. And everything. He had to get stretchered up after about 30 seconds. So he said, you see, Paddy, unfortunately, Paddy passed away. And you know, Paddy was he was really, really good friends with Pat Rice, my first youth team coach. So, you know, respect to Paddy. We had some good times back then, real good times.
Well, thank you, Kevin, for joining us, and it's been a real pleasure having you on the show, man.
Thanks for having me, Tez. Tony, Schwinn, nice to meet you guys. And look, don't be too down about it. We know the pain's it's painful right now, but we're Arsenal. We'll come back.
Thanks for coming on, Kev.
You're welcome. Kev. It was great talking with you.
Nice talking to you. You take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Oh, yeah. See you, Kev. Bye. And bye. You can don't forget, you can go to Kevin's website, bringhope.info, and, guys, hit the donation. That sounds like they're doing good things over there. As Kevin Campbell leaves the building, and you can follow us at clockend_talk. It's been a pleasure, boys.
It's been absolutely wonderful. I mean, I think we've never had a guest who's been so candid and been so real. You know, we come on every week and we try to look at things very objectively, but when you have another voice coming on and someone who's, you know, so closely associated with the club because of their, you know, past experiences, I think it's phenomenal that he was able to open up and say the things the way he said them.
No, it was good. It was really good. Okay, well, thank you, and we'll be what's our next game? Thursday.
So we'll be on Thursday.
So we'll probably come back on Friday or Saturday, I suppose. Let's hope it's a win, boys. Fuck, I can't do this again.
Yeah, we should start charging someone. I don't know who, but we should start charging someone for doing this week in, week out, shouldn't we?
Emotional damage. You've got to be able to sue someone for that.
Yeah, some country somewhere, I'm sure, gives you some vacation for this, right? For putting yourself through this.
Anyway, thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading, and you're with us here at the Clock End Talk, and we'll catch us all on the weekend. Thank you.